Good morning, church family. Morning. I want to welcome those of you who are online also. We miss you. And for those of you who are a long ways away, come visit us sometime. It's also interesting today, do you remember? And some of you are going to go, I'm not 20, so don't ask me that. Do you remember what you were doing 20 years ago? This is a strange thing for me to think back. It's already been 20 years. Seems like it was yesterday. The sermon is called They Fell. It is not about the Twin Towers, but I would like to draw some parallels to the story that was just given a little bit of a glimpse of this morning. Joshua chapter 8 is an interesting book and chapter. Before we start today, young people, they do have some word searches for you. And yes, I did make it 45 across and 45 down again. But I added a few more words. So have fun with that. And if you pass out because you just get overload from too many words, I'm sorry. But Joshua chapter 8 is an interesting chapter because of this. What do you do after there is something so traumatic and so wonderful at the same time, followed by something that is total defeat? What do you do when all the things that you ever knew to be true were suddenly come to a screeching halt and you don't even know whether there's a God or not because everything is so bad? Some of you say, well, I kind of feel that way now. Things have been crazy. But I want you to think back with me today, those of you who can, and some of those of you that can't, just kind of think of the world around you now and what it may have been like 20 years ago. September 11, 2001, most of us thought that the world would be a better place next year. Most of us had an anticipation that if Y2K didn't kill us, by the way, that's year 2000, Y2K didn't kill us because the computers all blew up and we had no more electricity or anything else, that we were going to be okay. Most people were feeling cautious, but things seemed to be up. In fact, that year, I mean, come on, Windows XP was released. Some of you are like, huh? Okay, the iPod was released. Some of you are like, what's that? There were other things that happened. There were other things that were going on in the world there. I thought it was all roses and not so bad until the towers happened. But if you look back and you see the things that happened in Switzerland, Kosovo, and on an airplane after the Twin Towers, there were all a bunch of bombings that were attempted and actually happened. Interesting. There was a fire in a motel in Manila. There were riots in Cincinnati. Those were only a few of the things going on, but sometimes I think the things that we think of the most endearing sometimes are the things that maybe just kind of get us off track just a little bit. Sometimes I think that the worst thing we lost that year was trust. Because when the towers went down, how many of you looked at somebody with skin that was not your color in a different way? How many of you looked at somebody that had a turban wrapped around their head in a different way? How many of you looked at people that went to a mosque in a different way? You see, I think every time something big like this happens, the most important thing we lose is trust. When the towers went down, so did our trust. We lost the ability to trust because we were suspicious of everybody, and that became the norm. How many of you remember when you didn't have to go through the scanning devices in the airports? Yeah, you remember that? That you didn't have to get a background check every time you did something that was really important. That you didn't have to fly with the fear that something was going to happen. Now, that wasn't exactly true, because if you remember the 70s and the 60s, there were lots of planes that were hijacked and blown up. But fear, what has it done to us over the last 20 years? A question. Our privacy, our independence, our free choice all took a hit. 20 years later, what have we gained? What have we learned? It's not all a downer, but what have we learned as Seventh-day Adventist Christians? We've learned that if you do not depend on the Bible and on God, that you can get off track really fast. That's what we've learned as a church. We've had all kinds of discussions and all kinds of fights since then about who's the greatest. And when it comes down to it, Jesus is the greatest and we're all following him. So this sermon, They Fell, it's going to talk about a town, a city, in which Israel lost their ability to trust each other. Because there was one family that decided that they were going to take stuff from Jericho. This is the view that my sister-in-law and brother-in-law had. Not quite. It was a little bit up the waterway from here in Jersey. But can you imagine seeing across the water the first airplane, boom, and then the second airplane, boom? No matter who you are, no matter what your background, no matter what your political thing was at that time, everybody had one thing in mind downtown. Get out. And you know, you've heard the calls and you've heard the last goodbyes of relatives in those towers. And that had to bring to my mind a very large question this morning. Are we ready to meet God? You see, because no matter if it's that, it's an airplane, or it's a disease, no matter what it is, are we ready as God's people to meet God now? All the things that we teach in the church are very, very important, but it all boils down to the fact, is your relationship with God to the point where you can surrender your life to him? I have that question, that nagging feeling, as the towers went down, who was ready? I know that there are many people that they didn't think twice. They saw it burning. I got to go in. I got to go save people. And they did. And living in Fox Valley, seeing those trucks come back up to Pierce and back up to Clintonville where the ambulances were and they were smushed. When I saw them on the freeway and they had a parade of police cars bringing them back up in honor so they could study how these things stood up to buildings falling on them. It kind of hit me hard. Those ones that were willing to give lives a second chance by giving their own life, would I have been able to do that? Then I remember the story of Jesus, and I remember that he did it, and I remember that as I was staring at these, I mean, that morning as I was sitting in the basement of the church at Fox Valley, and as we were in the school there with the kids, I turned on the TV and I said, kids, you're going to hear some things today and it's going to be very disturbing, but I want you to know what's going on. So Mrs. Nelson turned on the TV just in time to see the second tower get hit. The kids were terrified at first. Then they worried that we were in trouble. We said, no, it's okay. We're a long ways away from New York City. And then it was interesting because as the day progressed, we had a trip planned to the zoo. So we went to the zoo. Pastor Nelson kept going back and seeing the updates on the little teeny TV. You know, those box TVs, you remember those? Looking at it and seeing what was going on. And then we heard about the Pentagon. Then we heard about things going on in Appleton. And then people got a little scared. But then, something that I'll never forget, the skies went quiet. You see, our church was in the flight plan, usually, of landing airplanes. And Oshkosh is not too far away. So what we were experiencing was no airplanes. Do you realize how much noise goes away? Well, you do. You live in Madison. If you have no airplanes, guess what? It'd be weird. And then a little bit after that, we heard the airplanes coming in from Madison and other places. Sortie after sortie, loaded with every weapon possible, heading north. Then I got a little nervous because I've got military family. And I was like, God, are you coming? That Sabbath in church, I have never, ever seen the church so packed in my life. I met people that day that I did not know were members, and they probably were a long time ago, but they came back because they were worried that, is this it? I need to come back home. I need to realize that I am still in a safe place. And as the days and weeks and months passed after that, it slowly went back to normal. But some stayed because they knew that they weren't quite right with God and they wanted to be. The airport had all the airplanes land and there was no noise. And as those planes from Madison came, I felt like we had been destroyed. And there's many countries around the world that have that same feeling right now. Many people, even in our congregation, have that same feeling right now, that everything's been destroyed and we got to start over again. I'd like to tell you about this story in the Bible in Joshua, because I think AI has a lot to compare with not only September 11, but our situation that we're in right now. I find it amazing that sometimes after we've faced something that seems so big that we give up and we have despair. But God says in Joshua chapter 8, "Now the Lord said to Joshua, 'Do not fear or be dismayed. Take all the people of war with you and arise and go up to Ai. See, I have given it into the hands of the king of Ai and his people and the city to you.'" So after everything is the worst that they could possibly imagine, because they were basically routed. They went up and were like, we took out Jericho. Mm-hmm. The mightiest city with the biggest walls. Yeah. We're gonna take this city. It's just a little teeny burg, no problem. They did not talk to God. They did not talk to God before they went to Ai, and as they came up to Ai, this little puny place compared to the great Jericho, it seemed like the sky darkened and the arrows went through everything. It seemed like the people were 10 feet tall and were destroying them and everything was going wrong. And they were like, "Whoa, what's happening?" They all ran back and lots of people were killed. And they're like, "God, how could you abandon us?" When really they had abandoned God and gone with their egos. I think sometimes God shows us things like September 11 and a coronavirus to remind us that he can get us through things. That we do not dishearten or we don't want to be dismayed, because he inevitably is in charge. The story of Ai is an interesting story because disobedience got them there. And it was just one family. Picture that in your mind. That just is kind of foreign to us. We're like, "Hey, take that family and kill them all." But that's not really what was going on. They said, "Don't take anything from Jericho. Let it be an offering to God." And Achan and his family took stuff. Then didn't admit it. Then they cast lots, and then they eventually found them. And they did get stoned, all their whole family. I thought it was a little brutal. But if you look at disobedience to God, after a while, the consequences are brutal. Because if you spend a lifetime away from God, the end result is not spending eternity with him. And that is brutal in my mind. Because I want every one of my family, I want myself to be with God for eternity. So what happens in this story? It seems a little brutal, but the lesson that is learned here is that once you disobey, it causes repercussions and waves throughout the whole community. And when they attacked Ai, they not only did not consult God, but they had this sin that was going on, this problem that was going on, and they didn't care. They had routed the best city in the area. "We can take anything." Yeah! And then God allowed them to be defeated. It's interesting. This is actually some of the walls of Ai. And it's no longer in existence. It hasn't been for a very, very long time. In fact, they found some areas that it's burned. And there's two locations. There's the Ai during the time of Abraham, and there's the Ai during the time of Joshua. And as you look at this, you have to, you know, kind of wrap your mind around this. You see this city wall, and you see this army coming up against it. And I don't know about you, but if you've ever gone up to a city wall, Have you ever gone to the base of it and looked up? Even the old, old cities? It's like, how in the world did they get up and over that? Or how did they destroy all of this? And it's just amazing to me to see that this building is still in the ground there, the foundations and everything. Because even after they burned it, there is some left. But then you see the mechanics of war and you see how they took cities back then. It cost thousands and thousands of lives to get into that city. But God, when he took some of these other cities with them, it didn't cost that many lives. In fact, sometimes there was zero lost. But here at AI, they lost their lives, they ran away, and now they're despondent. What do you do when you make a mistake and there's disobedience in the camp? And what happens when you write it? Well, let's go back to our Bibles, okay? Joshua chapter 8. I'm going to start over again. Now the Lord said to Joshua, Don't fear or be dismayed. Take all the people of war with you and arise, go up to Ai. See, I have given into your hand the king of Ai and his people and the city and his land. You shall do to Ai and its king just as you did to Jericho and its king, and you shall take only the spoils. You will take only its spoils and its cattle as plunder for yourself. Set an ambush for the city behind it. So Joshua rose with all the people of war to go up to Ai, and Joshua chose 30,000 men, valiant warriors, and set them out at night. He commanded them, saying, see, you're not going to ambush the city from behind it. Do not go very far from the city, but all of you be ready. Then I and all the people who are with me will approach the city. And when we come out, and when they come out to meet us at the first, we will flee before them. They will come out after until we have drawn them away from the city. For they will say, they're fleeing because the first time that we attacked, they'll do the same thing. So we'll flee from them, and you will rise from your ambush and take positions of the city, for the Lord your God will deliver them into your hand. Then it will be when you have seized the city, you shall set fire to it. You shall do it according to the word of the Lord. See, I've commanded you this. So Joshua sent them away, and they went to the place of ambush and remained between Bethel and Ai in the west side of Ai. But Joshua spent the night among the people. Then Joshua rose early in the morning and mustered the people and went up to the elders of Israel before the people of Ai. Then all the people of war who were with him went up and drew near and arrived in front of the city and camped on the north side of Ai. Now there was a valley between him and Ai, and he took about 5,000 men and set them in ambush between Bethel and Ai at the west side of the city. So he stationed the city, all the army that was in the north side of the city and its rear guard to the west side of the city. And Joshua spent the night in the midst of the valley. And it came about then when the king of Ai saw it that the men of the city hurried and rose up early and went out to meet Israel in battle, he and all his people in an appointed place before the desert plain. But he did not know that there was an ambush against him behind the city. Joshua and all Israel pretended to be beaten before them and fled by the way of the wilderness. And all the people who were in the city were called together to pursue them. They pursued Joshua and were drawn away from the city. So not a man was left in Ai or Bethel who had gone out after Israel, and they left the city unguarded and pursued Israel. Then the Lord said to Joshua, stretch out the javelin in your hand and toward Ai, for I have given it to your hand. So Joshua stretched out the javelin that was in his hand toward the city, and the man in the ambush rose quickly from their place. And they stretched out his hand, and they ran and entered the city and captured it. They quickly set fire to it. And the men of Ai turned back and looked, and behold, the smoke of the city ascended in the sky, and they had no place to flee, for this way or that, or the people who were fleeing to the wilderness turned against their pursuers. When Joshua and all Israel saw the men in ambush and captured the city, and the smoke of the city ascended, they turned back and slew the men of Ai. The others came out from the city and encountered them, so they were trapped in the midst of Israel, some on this side and some on that side, and they slew them until no one was left. They survived, no one survived or escaped, but they took the king alive and brought him to Joshua. When Israel had finished killing all the inhabitants and Ai and the fields in the wilderness, when they pursued them, all of them had fallen by the edge of the sword until they destroyed them, and all Israel returned to Ai and struck it with fire again and the edge of sword. All who fell that day, both men and women, were 12,000 people of the city of Ai. For Joshua did not withdraw his hand, which stretched out the javelin until he had utterly destroyed the inhabitants. You can read more later today. It's an interesting battle. And if you're into that kind of history and things, it's interesting how they would come out of a city and leave themselves unguarded. But, you know, if you have an experience with this group of people that comes up and they ran away, you'd be like, yeah, these guys are chickens. We can go get them. We did it last time. But this time, God was there. And so sometimes what I'm talking about today is the fact that sometimes we forget that when God is on our side, there is something that happens, not only with our psyche, but who we are. This is kind of a picture of the area that the battle happened in. There's that valley down between on the left. And beyond that hill is actually where Ai is. And this is where the Ai of Abraham's time was. But it's probably because this is Bethel area and that is Ai. I did a little bit of research on it. But it's interesting, the area that it's in is kind of arid, but at the same time has trees and things like that. And when you see a city, typically cities have a valley near them. They're usually built on top of the hills and things like that, and they have to get water from some access point or something like that. But it's encouraging to me to see this story for a couple of different reasons. When I saw what happened in September 11 and I saw how it affected all of us, and it affected the world too, I realized that we're kind of like the children of Israel after the defeat of Ai. We're taken down to the lowest point we can get because we don't understand what just happened to us. We don't understand how God could let this happen. We don't understand that, you know, a country that was destroyed by a couple airplanes at the time because the financial centers were knocked out. Now we're experiencing a country that's experienced a flu and a lockdown. It's created a lot of tension between people and mistrust in situations. In times like these, we're expecting our leaders to be strong and clear and point us to the future. But if you looked that day at the leadership and they were blindsided, they had no clue what to do. I mean, what would you have done? The president was reading to little children and in the school. And what do you do? Get up and go, oh no, we're all gonna die. I mean, the children would freak out, would they not? So he waited, but you can look on his face. You can see the look on the president's face. Oh no, we've been attacked. And you can see the thinking process that's going on. You can see all the stress that's in his head during that time. I wonder what it was like for Joshua when they told him, guess what? We lost almost everyone that went to attack Ai. He went before God. It was like, why? Probably some of his family members too. Why? We all asked on September 11, why? This text, though, gives me hope. This text gives me hope because we haven't read the end of it yet. We haven't read the thing down below called the dedication. We're going to start in a little bit in verse 30. But it's very, very different for us these days because it seems like we've been under stress, some of us, for 20 years. There's this, that, or the other thing that's always kind of affected us. It's just kind of like comes back around. But all through that time, men and women are still going, God, here's my heart. God, here's my whole self. God, I want you to take everything. And yet, the temptation for us is to look and say, look at all the bad things that happened. I mean, for instance, after Windows XP became Windows ME, I mean, come on, there was no good things that happened after that. Sorry, just a techie joke. I mean, look, we can't even go into an airport and say goodbye to our loved ones anymore. We have to stop at the security point. Or the fact remains that there are still men, women, and children that are giving their hearts to Jesus Christ. And you and I can have a part in that. We can be the positivity in the negative storm that's all around us. I find it amazing that myself, I tend to go, negative stuff. But when you start thinking about positive stuff, there's something that goes on in our brains. Something that goes on in our brains when we start thinking about the good things that are happening, that how God has led. There's something in our brains that says, oh yeah, it doesn't matter what happened at Ai the first time. What happened the second time was totally God. You're not in charge, don't worry about it. The good things will come. And all of a sudden, the chemistry in our mind changes and we start to look at life and be like, you know what? This isn't as bad as some people say it is. Because I still have the opportunity to tell people how wonderful my God is. And until the day people tell me I can't, and even afterward, I will continue to tell people about Jesus Christ and what he means to me. Because he is the one that defeats our AI. He is the one that defeats anything that comes against us. And in fact, a lot of times we get so stressed out of almost the last 2 years. We have fear, we have loss, we have abandonment, we have financial issues, we have family problems, we have politics that make you sick, we have sicknesses, we have surgeries, we have births, we have birthdays, we have Zoom meetings, we have online school, we have in-person church and not so in-person church, we have streaming church, and we have funerals, and we have births. Maybe I said that twice, but I want to get more births and funerals in. We've even had a wedding during this time. If the Bible is correct at the predictions of the future, we might have more bad things happen, but we will also have more good things that happen because God is going to be there. By faith, we may have to look at our lives and say, listen, I can't trust anything except for Jesus Christ himself, but I cannot let my faith in Jesus Christ slide. Now is the time to listen to God. Now is the time to band together and with people move forward in telling people about Jesus Christ. Because I look back and I think about when the second happened, when the building started to collapse. It tears me up to think about the people that were above that fire. It tears me up. I have a question in my head still to today. Did they know God? Did they surrender to God? Did they have any hope? Did they have any capability of knowing that there was assurance that just because they were dying that day, it's not the end? That God loved them, that somebody loved them? Turn in your Bibles with me to the last part of Joshua here. Verse 30 in chapter 8. Then Joshua built an altar to the Lord, the God of Israel, in Mount Ebal, just as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had commanded the sons of Israel, as is written in the book of the law of Moses, an altar of uncut stones on which no man has wielded an iron tool, that they offered a burnt offering to it, to the Lord, and sacrificed a peace offering. He wrote there a story, he wrote there on the stones, listen to this, he wrote there on the stones the law of Moses, which had been written in the presence of the son of Israel. All Israel with the elders and officers and their judges were standing on both sides of the ark before the Levitical priests who carried the ark of the covenant of the Lord, the stranger as well as the native. Half of them stood in front of Mount Gerizim and half on the front of Mount Ebal. Just as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had given command of first to bless the people of Israel. Then afterward, he read all the words of the law. Now, let me ask you a question. Have you ever just glanced over stuff and then realized later what it said? Let me read this again. Then he read all of the words of the law. The first five books of the Bible. He read all the laws. Can you imagine that sermon? Some of you are like, man, I'd be like hoping I have a snack. And the kids are like, that would be so boring. I think I'd become just like the people in AI, dead. But he read the whole law. But let me ask you a question. If you're into something and you just saw the glory of God and you want to hear more about God, it's interesting that once you have that experience that you want to hear more about God and you're open to it. And all of a sudden, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours turns into nothing. Don't worry, I'm not going to preach that long today. But as you read down here about the ark and all the things that have happened and that the book of law was read, there was not a word of all that Moses had commanded, which Joshua did not read before all the assembly of Israel with the women and the little ones and the strangers who were living among them too. They all paid attention because they had just seen what God did. If you want to see God do something wonderful, it's time that we trust him. In a world that does not trust anyone, it's time to trust God. We have to go up against the things that we think have power and are chasing us away, and we have to think in our minds they don't have any power whatsoever if God doesn't give it to them. We try to make plans and we try to sync with God and his commands, and all that we try to do, we think are, you know, those things are going to succeed. But we need God. If things are not going to succeed, it's just because God is not there. And even if God is there, sometimes our plans fail. We cannot win in life without God. And I'm not one that says if you have God, nothing bad will ever happen to you. But I know this, that our end result will be God and us for eternity. No matter if we get something and we die, something is wrong, that nothing else will be a problem. I think we're fast-forwarding here just a minute. I love the dedication of the nation at the end of this story of Ai. It was not arrogant. It was not boastful. It was just the end of a very stressful event. Things would never be the same anymore because they learned that a couple of their families were destroyed. Today, as a nation, we were once known as a strong nation, but we need to look at the ways that we defeat the virus and say, are they really godly? Without God, it will not be blessed. We as his people need not only just say, oh, you know what, this or that about the coronavirus, but what we need to be talking about is, do you know God in case something bad happens to you? Do you know God even if something never happens to you? Do you know him and do you have a relationship with him? Because that's what's important today. The negotiations that we have in our brains about what is and what can be and what will be, let me tell you, none of us really know what the future is. Only God does. But imagine that sermon as Joshua and the people are reading the law and they find out that God is a person of his word. Can you imagine what it would be like for us to know that he says, if you love me and you keep my commandments, you will be with me in paradise? The one that created the whole world said this. And with openness in our hearts and godly expectation, it's amazing if you really listen to that and understand that God said that we can be part of his kingdom. So if the building below you is falling and you know you're going to die, it's not just anger, frustration, sorrow, and despair. It's praise be to God. Your will be done. I trust that you will make me one of your children. There's no fear of death. There's no fear that if I get coronavirus, if I get put on life support, and if I do not make it, or if I do make it, that I still am linked up with God. That's the most important thing I could ever teach you, is to be secure in your relationship with God. Otherwise, it comes out in a way that's very crippling and very damaging to other Christians around you. It's very, very dangerous and damaging to be a person that does not have the hope of salvation, because we become mean and nasty to one another. We compare ourselves to one another. We try to see who's the greatest. Look at what happened to the disciples. But when a building's burning and a building's going down, there's only one thing on everybody's heart: get out. There's only one thing on the firefighters' hearts and the policemen's hearts at that time: get them out. So I think it's probably best for us not to think of ourselves as people in a building, but the ones that are going into the building while it's burning. I don't want you to be a hero just because you want to be a hero. I want you to know that you're after people's hearts so that if something happens to them that is the end of their life, that they have the assurance that they can go to heaven with Jesus and live with him for eternity. So I guess today the dedication that Joshua had here, the rededication of Israel, would be something that we need to do on this day as we commemorate and we remember what happened on September 11. I think it's a dedication for us, too, to look and see that new things happen. I don't know if any of you have been to Ground Zero since then. It's a very sobering place, especially since I was there before and saw what was there before. There's a memorial there. And there's a fire station there that has all the fascia that is marble scraped off the front. Let me say that again. How many of you have been able to scratch marble much? Not a whole lot, but it's scraped off because of all the stuff that had happened there as the buildings came down. But I want you to remember that 20 years ago, we may have lost that trust and innocence, but that Jesus Christ died for each person in the building. And here's the shocker. Jesus Christ died for those people that were driving the airplanes into the buildings. The problem is with us is we hate people that hurt and maim so much that we don't realize that God loves even them and wants them to change too. But as they yelled, as they went in, and as they died for a cause, I had to think to myself, will God let them in? And then I had to struggle within myself, is it because they killed so many people or was they didn't have a good relationship with God? And then I saw what they did the nights before they went to do what they were supposed to do. And I realized, because I work with a bunch of Muslims, they were terrible Muslims. They drank and they did things that they were not supposed to do, knowing that they were not supposed to do it the night before. They indulged in everything, because they knew that the next day they would die. So the question is, remaining with us, no matter if you're going to be in the building or you're going to be in an airplane, no matter what it is, if you knew you were going to die tomorrow, how would you live? Would you live a godly life or would you let it all go because you didn't really trust God? I've had to go through those feelings and thoughts myself. So as we commemorate not just the building, not just the airplanes, we commemorate the people that fought that day for life, the people that day that fought for the ability for others to live, even if they were going to sacrifice their own. Could we not be filled with suspicion toward others anymore? Could we not look at strangers anymore and say that they're not worthy of our love and compassion as Christians? Could we be filled with not fear, but proudly proclaim that we have love in our hearts enough for the whole world? The walls may have fallen on those cities and the walls may have fallen on those buildings, but we are God's children. And as God's children, sometimes I think we need to remember that God's still in charge. We need to remember that God still loves us and that God still has a plan for us. So no matter what happens over the next weeks, months, days, years, knowing that God still has a plan for us is something that we need to remember in the pew or at home or in your car or wherever you are, that God cares richly about you and that we need to follow him in every way we can, not because we have to. You heard this right from a pastor. Did you know you don't need to keep all the Ten Commandments? God can cover that, but I want to. I want to because I love him with every ounce of my body. I want to do the best that I can so that people, when they look at me, they don't see me. They just see what my God does. Amen. And I want them to know that, yeah, I'm flawed. I do dumb things now and then, but I want them to see Jesus through me. And so when I start talking about Jesus, they say, you know, I know, you're a little different than most people. I mean, I know you're weird, but, you know, you're a little different. You're a little different because you care about people genuinely. I can tell. When I'm around you, I know that you really care about me. I can see it in your eyes. I can see it in the way you behave. Just one last story as we close. Can you imagine all of the people coming down the emergency flights of stairs and watching the firemen go up, the ones that never came back? Can you imagine the thoughts and the feelings of the people as they get out. Oh, we're out. And then having to run for their lives because the building is falling, knowing that they passed people that were going to save people on the way down. I want to be one of those people. I want to be one of those people that when everybody's running away from people that are just nasty because they're just frumpy and grumpy because they don't know God, I want to be the one that goes to them and says, you know what? There's hope. There's hope. I want you to know that there's hope. And even if the building's going to go down and we can't get out, I'll ride it down with you. And we'll praise God the whole time. And if you're in AI, confess, get out, surrender, because God's coming. Let's bow our heads. Our Father in heaven, today we remember. Some of us can, some of us weren't even born yet. Dear Father, but as we remember this day, help us to remember that you were there among all the chaos and the pain and suffering. That you were there, you were even pleading with the ones driving the airplanes for their hearts and minds, that you wanted them. You wanted them to be part of your kingdom. And dear Father, that you want our hearts and you want our minds and that you want us to help others also. Dear Father, you want us to run toward trouble and try and help. You don't want us to flee. Help us, dear Father, because the temptation is there. I've already been there. I've fled a number of times with the fear that I'll get this virus, the fear that maybe I'd be left without a family. All those things go through our minds, dear Father. Please be with us now as we reorganize as a church, as we face our community and realize that things aren't the same, but we still have the same mission. Be with us, dear Father, as we have a skeleton crew in leadership. And dear Father, as those that have been asked to do things and those that want to volunteer later, that you'll put upon our hearts things that we can do to influence this community for you. Dear Father, thank you for being our God. Thank you for being with us during the times that we thought no one else was around. Dear Father, help us to do a better job as a church, reaching out to our fellow Seventh-day Adventist Christians and those that aren't Seventh-day Adventist Christians. Help us, dear Father, to be your men and women, your boys and girls, your young people. In Jesus' name, amen.